And we're back here at syndicatednews.net talking to Leon Koziol, J.D. Leon Koziol is a civil rights advocate who has practiced law in the state of New York for more than 23 years. He's featured for his work on the CBS program 60 Minutes, CNN, and the New York Times. Mr. Koziol recently sacrificed a lucrative career in law and politics to promote parenting rights in our courts and public institutions. His career highlights include six-figure recoveries, a perfect record in criminal defense verdicts, and a final judgment in New York State Supreme Court declaring unconstitutional the operation of the largest casino in the state. A former city councilman, school board attorney, and manufacturing supervisor for a Fortune 500 firm, Mr. Koziol made a run for Congress, state senate, and local county executive before founding the Parents' Rights Institute, a private partnership of parents seeking to reform custody and child support laws. He has filed a number of test cases in federal and state court. Mr. Koziol, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Wonderful. Welcome to syndicatednews.net. Mr. Koziol, we were wondering...
I'm happy to be here.
Thank you so much for taking the time to sit with us. Mr. Koziol, we were wondering... You've been a prominent constitutional rights attorney for more than 23 years. Now you've sacrificed a lucrative career to establish this Parenting Rights Institute. Why did you do that?
The constitutional right of parents is something that has become a greater focus in my life in recent years as I became victimized by the system. I did not do family court matters or divorces, accepted very few of those, believe it or not, and I was more preoccupied with constitutional cases and civil matters, criminal cases. I specifically avoided the domestic relations matters because I saw the controversies that they manufactured in those courts, and I felt that children were being harmed, and it wasn't my way of practicing law. I don't see that as consistent with the genuine practice law. I see that as manufacturing controversies for the sake of, for the most part, for the sake of raising money, and I'm at the detriment of children and parents, innocent parties that are hauled into court.
On October 10th, 2010, you authored a perspective in support of this Parenting Rights Institute. It was a candid and startling report of child control practices in America. What has this done for you and the people you're trying to help?
The people that I'm focused on are those that probably are not fully aware of what is occurring to them when they go into family court. They go in with in good faith, believing that the system is out to benefit children. And in the end, they invert the parenting roles by placing children essentially above their parents and make the parents fight over their own children. It's a barbaric process. And this prospectus is extremely important for people to review because it is a trend-setting, realistic perspective of what is actually occurring. It's designed to save people money, prevent them from lawyer and parent abuse that goes on in these courts, and especially the actual harm that is caused to children. It can be accessed by simply looking it up at leonkoziol.com. And the more people that read it, we find, are beginning to see a different side, an important side to this. It means a lot to parents. It means a lot to industry, people, businesses who are forced and hauled in, whether as witnesses or in terms of the garnishments that go on with child support orders. We have effectively now placed the vast majority of the parenting population into these courts and then dominated them and harmed our nation, our productivity as a nation. When you look at the collective numbers of cases nationwide, and you look at all the people that are hauled into these courts, the businesses that are affected, the lost time, psychological, physical, emotional harm that's created is a huge damage to our productivity as a nation. And there's never been any studies on it. So this is a prospectus that is designed to get the funding that is absolutely necessary collectively, so that rather than being harmed on an individual basis through massive attorney's fees, we might be able to get the cases through the courts that we need that will set the precedent that will reform this area of law, which is so important.
For our listeners who may not know what a prospectus is, Leon just explained that well. And just for safety's sake, so we don't forget, that website is www.leonkoziol.com. That's www.leonkoziol.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You also identify various test cases that you are prosecuting against domestic relations courts of New York State. Could you give us an update?
Yes, I have one case that I'm seeking to file a writ to the United States Supreme Court. It's been through the appellate courts of New York and the High Court of New York, and I'm hoping that the U.S. Supreme Court will take it. Of course, but relatively few cases are taken every year by the Supreme Court, but the more support we can get from people, the better chance we have, and this is one method of doing that. Another case is in the federal district court, and we hope to go through the federal track as well. That's where civil rights are generally litigated, and I'm hoping that both will give us at least two cracks at the apple of trying to get the U.S. Supreme Court to hear these cases and perhaps set them necessary precedent.
Okay, now on page 5 of your prospectus, you state, and I'm going to quote it right from there, a rush to judgment was made by certain media in upstate New York surrounding my professional license and sacrificial stance against this child control system. The complete story reads like a John Grisham novel, or more strikingly, a modern-day civil rights ordeal. Could you give us the blockbuster synopsis?
It's been a five-year ordeal for me. There's a cause and effect. In constitutional rights cases, it is typically circumstantial evidence that we show the intent of the various parties, the governmental entities that we bring cases against. And in this situation, you have this remarkable cause and effect. For every time that I challenged the court system and the way that they fleeced parents, essentially, of major amounts of fees and money, there has been a corresponding reaction to it. And it, 5 years ago, I had a very lucrative career. My career was peaking. I was making a run for Congress. And today, I've lost my license. They're threatening my home. I lost my children for 10 months. I have been monitored. I have been scrutinized by police. My family has been scrutinized by police. It's remarkable what is occurring here over the past 5 years. And so I brought my cases to seek, obviously, to vindicate my free speech, my constitutional rights, and to get this reform through.
From the extensive material on your website, it's clear that you've saved many careers and victims of false accusations. Why hasn't anyone rallied around you and this parenting cause, given its dramatic effect on our society?
There has been a fear, you know, among the people who follow what has happened to me, and fearful that custody cases, what may occur in support court, people who are jailed for not paying debts. I mean, these are unconstitutional debtor prisons. And you have 3 years ago, I was warned by a father's rights advocate in Massachusetts. I was featured on his nationwide radio program, and he told me the same kind of thing would happen to me as it's happened to other lawyers. And I frankly did not believe it at the time, and now I stand here as a victim. So it's the fear of retaliation. It's much like what goes on in China and other countries. It's very real in America, and especially depending on who you're criticizing. When you're criticizing bench and bar practices, that's a very powerful element. The judicial branch is a very powerful branch of government, and, you know, in this particular situation, they're acting as super parents, and their involvement is highly unnecessary in the vast number of cases that come into the system. But once in the system, it's a tremendous money-making opportunity. And so, you know, my hope, of course, is to be that martyr, if you will, that sacrificial lamb, the person that has a great background, unblemished, over 50 years, 23 years in the practice, and suddenly now I'm some kind of a bad person. I've never been charged or convicted of any kind of crime, and they're trying every which way to find fault with what I'm doing. So it's a risky move, but I'm prepared to do that, because I think if they'll do this to me, my gosh, what they'll do to the average American out there that's facing similar challenges.
Now, only 4 days after you released this prospective nationwide, you had two police cars arriving at your home and two government agents with two flatbed trucks to confiscate two cars from your driveway. I know there are a lot of twos in that question, but it sounds like New York State has it out for you. Could you tell us about that briefly?
Yeah, it was remarkable. Yesterday I was working in my home office, because obviously I have no licensing privileges now, or whatever I do have is limited. And so I looked out the window, and suddenly there was a giant scene occurring there. There were two flatbeds, there were two patrol cars, there were police officers, child support collection agents. I mean, it looked like a SWAT team. You'd swear there was some sort of giant drug dealing operation going on here. This is, by the way, this is a beautiful suburban home overlooking this city. I lived there for many years, raised my children. My children were born there. Thank God they were present at the time. And they came to my door, and you'd swear you were in a communist country. We're talking about a monetary debt. You're not talking about you know, anything serious here. And the police officers, who I have recently, on behalf of another client, just before my license was taken, I had brought an action against this township and its police officers on a domestic relations case, in which another man had his career damaged through false accusations. He won his case in criminal court. I brought the case against the Hartford because one of their police officers was involved in this. And so these officers were out there, and to my way of thinking, they were trying to instigate something. a scary situation. In any event, survived it. They did what they had to do, and I'll be back in court on the damages that that has cost me. So it's just a clear example of retaliation and what is occurring, because this is a lucrative institution. This is what I call this child control institution. It's a gold mine for lawyers and forensic people and government agents. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, and I'm not here trying to affect people's ability to make income. I'm just here saying that we shouldn't damage children and use them as the instrument for fleecing parents unnecessarily.
Leon, many horror stories are emerging from this child support collection process. And this Purple Heart Soldiers, a video link featured on your blog site. What's the focus of that? Why focus on that? Show me the connection.
I found that to be an interesting one that was sent to me by another father's rights advocate, essentially done in another state. And it's on our website. You can look it up. But it features an Iraqi war veteran. It's actually a major. And he came back, and there was a note on his door. And after he completed his service, came back to the States. And it really affected me. It affected me because as I watched this, it's only about 10 minutes or so, I just couldn't believe how it had ended. And the man ended up taking his life. He came home to an empty house, and the child support collection agencies came after him. He couldn't afford to make the payments. They imputed income to him, which is a ruthless tactic that they use, and he just couldn't make his payments. So they gave him a jail sentence, and rather than serve time, he took his own life. And with the closing words that, "I love my country, but my country does not love me." When we are losing our soldiers to domestic custody wars more than we are our foreign wars, we have a serious problem in this country. And if you look at the suicide statistics, it's a real problem that's been identified. It just emphasizes the serious nature. This is a sleeping giant, this problem. And it's a shame that police and military personnel are just so severely affected. We have a corrections officer or problem here in our area where the suicide rate is very high. And almost all of these, they involve some domestic relations problem. So it really needs to be corrected, and it really had an effect on me.
You use phrases such as parenting time, parenting agreements, and parenting orders in place of the more recognized terms such as custody, visitation, and divorce decrees. Does that have anything to do with your reform agenda?
Yes, these are terms that more accurately reflect what should be going on in these courts. It's not new in the sense that there's a case, for example, Webster versus Ryan. It's a 2001 opinion in an esteemed family court jurist in our state capital of Albany, and this is almost 10 years ago now, where he recommended discontinuance of the words custody and visitation, for example, because they're antiquated and they have an oppositional framework about them that is detrimental to children. And that's based on, you know, many, many years of experience. These phrases are simply inappropriate. They are offensive, and visiting one's child, that's not what a father does. And custody, why, my goodness, that smacks of the thing that happens when you apprehend criminals. Not appropriate for families, not appropriate for children, but it's a great framework if you want to make money. The idea, of course, is to pass money from one parent to the other, and once money is transferring, it's like, well, this is a big thing in New York and Massachusetts and many of these other states, California, that if it moves, you tax it. And once you have transfer payments occurring, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, not just for government, but many other people. And the proper phrases are what ought to be used here. And it would probably certainly alleviate these battles, these fights over children, these barbaric custody wars that are going on.
Now, you recently argued one of your test cases in an appeals courtroom in Rochester, New York. As I understand it, that courtroom is dedicated to Susan B. Anthony, and I know it because I've seen that courtroom and I've seen that wall that you refer to. It's a place where she was convicted for voting in violation of gender discriminatory laws in 1872. Are there any parallels with that then and you today?
Yeah, there is. When I went into that court, my expectation was I would be able to tip my constitutional rights, my questions, my gender equality issues. And the remarkable aspect of it weren't, they closed that aspect of my arguments. They wouldn't hear the constitutional argument, and it was limited to whether I was paying or not. I had a serious problem in New York State. They've not been hearing my constitutional questions and finding me every single technical angle to prevent me from bringing these arguments. This is now over 5 years. I thought I would finally have my day in this court, And many have criticized me by saying, well, geez, you're a lawyer, you're prominent. That's the way the media described you in 2005 before all this took place. Well, you know, how could you, you know, not pay your child support? How could you do this, that, and the other thing? Well, I haven't committed a crime, but I'm doing what people like Susan B. Anthony did. And ironically, they convicted me. Now, they didn't convict me of a crime, but I call it a conviction because in all respects, they treat you like a criminal. And I did not get, as far as I'm concerned, justice served in that courtroom. So it was a shocking thing to me. And there's the certificate of conviction of Susan B. Anthony, you know, right there on a plaque on the wall. And you'd think we would have learned something since 1872. So apparently it's okay to argue gender equity issues if the woman is there. Actually, she wasn't given that right in 1872. But right now we're talking about the 21st century. So, yeah, there are parallels. But gender goes both ways for men and women. And this is a serious problem. It's what I call the last bastion of institutionalized discrimination remaining unchecked in America today. And that has to do with discrimination, of course, against fathers.
I understand that you have one case seeking justice against the state for taking your children. What's that all about?
That's a case that is in a federal court, and it's under seal. I can only state that it's one of many cases that I'm, one of several test cases that I'm pursuing. But it is one that has produced retaliation from state officials and those that I've named in the litigation. And that is startling because I never imagined that, you know, your courts are supposed to be open to the public, free access. And I don't see that happening in my case. I see petitions are the appropriate way of registering your grievances in government. Courts are the substitutes for taking the law into your own hands out in the streets. And I see a problem here in the retaliation that I'm experiencing.
Okay, so let's see if I've got this. The state of New York took your children. They've taken your professional attorney's license. They've taken your driving privileges. They've taken your ability to make a living and, of course, by extension, your capacity to make child support payments. Then they took your cars in case someone should find you work, and they took your passport, too. Your reputation and your dignity as a parent. What haven't they taken from you yet?
Well, sort of my physical being, I suppose. They have reduced me piecemeal like that. It's like piranha, in a sense. You're taking a chunk out of the person until there's nothing left. And that's why I call it the criminalization of fatherhood. I'm not the first to coin that phrase. You've seen that in works by Stephen Baskerville, for example. And it is exactly what's occurring here. They don't call it criminalization. They don't call it a criminal conviction. And they throw you in jail on a preponderance of the evidence rather than beyond a reasonable doubt, which should be the standard in these cases. You have serious violations of constitutional questions across the board, which is the mainstay of my federal and state lawsuits. And my hope is to get reform and to get precedent at the Supreme Court level someday. And we're making progress. I just have to survive this somehow. Obviously, they've taken everything from me, and these lawsuits are very costly. And we're looking forward through this prospectus. It's designed to get people to invest, to donate. We rely entirely on donations, and they're bleeding me dry to the point where I will not be able to complete these cases. That's the big fear here because of the vast sacrifice that I put into them.
What has this done to your belief in the American Constitution, which you've spent a lifetime promoting?
Certainly made me a bit cynical. I'm a strong believer in the American Constitution. That document is the number one protection of the citizenry against abuse from our own government. That's the way it was designed. And I find that this Constitution is gradually being diluted to have very little effect. And, you know, parenting is considered the oldest liberty interest by the U.S. Supreme Court, repeatedly declared as such. And yet, in these family courts, we're running roughshod over this right. You know, children are losing their parents unnecessarily. Fights are being, you know, caused by these what I call cheaply crafted products, lawyers creating controversies. Lawyers aren't selling anything, they're selling controversies. And, you know, parent, that's easy to do in the parenting context. You take any man or woman who loves it, especially ones who love their children the most, you threaten their children, even from the other parent. You threaten the taking of their children, and they will do anything for that child. It becomes a very lucrative multi-billion-dollar industry, a regular gold mine. And I have really been affected because I really didn't think it was like this. And, you know, money prevails and the Constitution is being damaged.
Well, it's interesting that you're familiar. I've been listening to an interviewer talk to a dentist from Florida who's experiencing very much situation that you're experiencing, not to this extent, but it's getting close. And perhaps if enough fathers get together and decide that they're going to push back and not accept it. Maybe there something can be done to readdress this problem because it's happening nationwide. Now, over the years, you've seen firsthand the work of lawyers in these domestic courts. What's your recommendation for those people that are seeking legal representation? What do you recommend?
I recommend that they avoid lawyers as much as possible. This is a lawyer talking, obviously. There's been retaliation here, and logically so, I suppose, if you're threatening someone's livelihood. I don't do it maliciously or in any bad faith manner. I do it because I think children are being harmed dramatically, more than ever before. We see this everywhere in our society today. And each parent, once they retain a lawyer, there's the old phrase that any community that can't support one lawyer can always support two. Because what the lawyer, one lawyer does is he's promising the world to the father and the other lawyer's promising the world to the mother. But what they fail to realize is that in any estate, in any family estate, the estate is limited. It's finite. It will always go down as they fight and fight and to the point where lawyers gauge how many liquid assets they have available, and finally, in many situations, when the money and assets run out, that's when they settle. So I would recommend arbitration, mediation, and more importantly than anything else is agreement. I mean, people who can't live together, that's becoming mainstream today. They should work a way out. They should avoid courts, avoid lawyers. I can't say that with enough emphasis, because this is where, in the end, and it's too late, they don't get any refunds for any of this, children are harmed, the parents hate each other more, controversies are inflamed, it's like throwing gas on a fire. Now, many get through the court system okay, but I see that as the exception to the minority and the exception to the rule.
So what's the answer? The average American or victim of domestic court abuse, what are they to do to achieve this real reform? Is it possible?
Well, we need organization. We have a lot of fledgling groups across the country. I've been to Washington, D.C., on a number of occasions as a guest speaker and these parenting conventions that have been scheduled there, and we just don't get the turnout that this deserves. When we get our father's rights meetings, we get callers that say, well, geez, you know, we got a basketball game or a bowling appointment. I'm sorry, but children are the priority here. And we just don't have enough people, and I understand it's a difficult issue. People go into family court, they're happy to get out. But this has to be the focus. This is the number one problem in America today. It is a quiet form of discrimination, and it is the greatest cancer of our day. And it's particularly evident in America. We have to organize. We have to support efforts like what I'm trying to do. I'm looking for a convention, a parent rights convention, either in New York City or possibly upstate. They had a convention, the Women's Rights Convention, occurred here near where I live in Seneca Falls, New York. And that, through that convention, perhaps we can organize rallies and workshops at our nation's capital and around the country. We need, groups to get together and form a nationwide network and to challenge these laws in every state. And that's kind of what I'm doing and what I'm offering to help others do through our organization.
Well, you've heard from Mr. Leon Cozio, and he was an attorney, a prominent attorney in the state of New York, who's lost all of his privileges one after the other. As a result, he feels of retaliation by the state of New York when he began to fight over his constitutional rights to his children. And we're going to have Mr. Cozio join us for a question and answer very soon, and you're going to hear him again here on syndicatednews.net several times before we actually interview him for the question and answer, because these questions are so valid that we have to air this program several times. Mr. Cozio, thank you for your courtesy in calling us today. Give us questions. And that's a wrap.